Delighted to be joined by Jamie Frizzell, Vice President of Global Business Development at Freudenvector. Freudenvector is an engineering and process equipment provider founded in 1972, which manufactures and markets process equipment for solids handling to the pharmaceutical, nutraceutical, food, confectionery, chemical, and the battery industries. Equipment applications include coating, drying, agglomerating, granulating, layering, and tablet forming. Having spent nearly 29 years in oral solid dose manufacturing, Jamie has a vast range of knowledge and experience within this sector, particularly in the containment of potent compounds, WIP, SIP systems, facility design, and automated control systems. Hello, Jamie, and welcome to the Pharma Tech Talks podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about current manufacturing trends, which I know you know a lot about. So let's get started by asking, what are some of the current processing equipment trends?
Well, hi, Christian. First of all, thank you for having me. It's good to be here. One of the things I guess I would mention is sustainability is becoming a real topic of discussion in the industry. Everybody's focusing on how we would reduce our carbon footprint, our energy consumption. If you look at things like what Pfizer's doing with their net zero initiative, trying to be carbon net zero by 2040, that's becoming a real push in the industry. Obviously, reducing energy consumption, reducing emissions, even things like reducing water usage. So when you're thinking about WIP or CIP systems, how do you reduce the amount of water it takes to clean the equipment, making the cleaning more efficient? And then along with that goes wastewater. So the less water you're using to clean the equipment, the less wastewater you're generating that needs to be treated to remove pharmaceutical products from the waste system. And then finally, just organic solvents have always been a big use in the industry, and companies are really focusing more on how do we reduce or remove the need for organic solvents in our processes. So thinking about the formulations, how can they reformulate it from a solvent process to an aqueous process, or at least reduce the amount of solvents that are being used. And then I guess along with that kind of goes space-saving designs. So if you can reduce the footprint of your facility, you're going to reduce your carbon footprint. So you might be able to find ways to make the equipment smaller to fit with the facility, but you always have to keep the process in mind. So we can't impact the process by making the equipment too small.
So it's a lot about efficiencies then, and does that follow through to the cost of the equipment as well? A lot of the times when people talk about efficiency, it has the knock-on effect of being more cost-effective. And is that the same for the equipment as well? Do we see savings happening in the equipment manufacture?
Yes. I mean, there are trade-offs. There's things that if you want to make the equipment more efficient or energy efficient, it might add some initial upfront investment. But in the long term, that should reduce the overall operating costs. But let's just take solvents, for example. If you can remove the use of solvents, you're going to remove actual cost of the equipment because we don't need to make it ATEX explosion-proof design. So that would actually be a cost savings on the equipment side.
Yeah, very much so. And what do you see as some of the best practices to consider when you're implementing a new process system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, when it comes to equipment, we believe customization is really the key. The customer shouldn't really settle for an off-the-shelf design because they have very unique processes, unique products. Their facility might have some unique constraints. So our belief is that the equipment should be customized to fit the customer's actual product, process, facility, how the material flows through the facility as much as possible. So that's really kind of been the key for us.
What do you see as the biggest constraints on that customization? Is it something like space?
It can be, yeah. It depends on where the facility, I mean, the type of facility or where the facility is at. A lot of times, yeah, we run into situations where the rooms are very, very small. It's an existing, maybe older facility, so it hasn't been designed with this equipment in mind. So we're trying to optimize the layout of the equipment in the facility, things like orientations, where do we place the auxiliary equipment. Maybe the facility wasn't designed with a tech space in behind the equipment, so we have to find the right location to place the various ancillary pieces of equipment that go along with it, and then routing of all the piping and ducting and things like that, that so we don't impact the process.
Yeah. And what changes can you see happening in the future for process equipment? And do you have any predictions as to how these changes might impact the bio and the pharma industry?
Sure. Kind of like I mentioned, some of the reduced footprint thing I think is going to come more into play. There's a lot of consolidation and facility consolidation industry. Flexibility is also a big factor. You buy a piece of equipment for a particular product or family of products, but you don't always know what the future holds. So it's good to kind of think a little bit broader so you can plan in some flexibility with the equipment to maybe allow you to process a wider range, batch size or multiple processes in the same piece of equipment. And that's a really good one. But yeah, I mean, anytime you're, like I said, you're designing the equipment to make it more space saving, you really can't impact the process. So that's got to be a factor.
And I know you work with material handling as well as the process equipment side of things. And you just mentioned flexibility there. And sometimes flexibility is that the equipment can do different things. But, you know, in terms of flexibility, I'm kind of thinking disposable technology in terms of containers, charging. You know, how do you see that? Is it always going to be rigid stainless steel equipment that's mating with the process equipment, or do you see a space there for flexible solutions as well?
I think there's a good opportunity for both. I think both flexible and rigid make sense for different applications. Certainly with compound applications, containment applications, flexible can make a lot of sense in some cases where you don't have a lot of other equipment than that then needs to be cleaned and swabbed and then validated. Obviously with flexibles, there's a waste byproduct that has to be considered. So there's an impact there, but I think just, the more you can think about all the different steps in the process, not just focus on one piece of equipment, think about the upstream processes, the downstream processes, and how the material gets from one step to the next, that really kind of plays into how that material handling component flows throughout the entire facility.
Yeah. Yeah. And just touching on automation, do you see this impacting on the industry?
Yeah, I think it will. In the last several years, everyone's talked about Industry 4.0 or Pharma 4.0 and how we can implement that in the industry. And the big push there was just kind of modernization, automation of the equipment, collection of data, tying the systems into higher level factory systems to collect all of that data. But now we have to think about what do we do with that data? So we have this great wealth of information, but it can be kind of overwhelming if you don't have a plan for how you deal with that data. So people are already starting to talk about Industry 5.0 and Pharma 5.0. So I think that's going to play more into how we handle that data. So building in some intelligence into the systems, some process intelligence, even like maintenance intelligence. So things like predictive maintenance, there's instrumentation you can put on the machine that tell you when you might have a future failure or pending failure of the machine. Process analytics, where it can even look at trends of the process over time or from batch to batch and look at variabilities and predict some of that and help analyze why that might be happening and what needs to be done. And I even think AI is going to come in at some point. I mean, we're already starting to see a lot of things with this, you know, chat GPT and some of the crazy things it can do. And I really think AI is going to come in at some point where you can start having some intelligence that really digs into this wealth of data and can start feeding back really good information on what can be done to improve.
And is this all sort of focusing on product quality? Is that what the drive for all this data? I know, just, you know, from experience, we've seen the size of tablets reducing. You know, these are getting smaller, so you're getting better bioavailability for the products, and hence the smaller, probably more potent as well. Sometimes the data is collected and not much is done with it, but I'm assuming this is all driving towards an improved product quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the end goal of pharma manufacturing, is the quality of the product. But I think there's also some things like even operating costs that can be reduced by some intelligence in the process of how you run the process, how you maintain the equipment. And just, I guess, touching on your point on the reduced dosage, yeah, mini tabs has become very popular for us, especially in the potent compound world. So tablets that are, you know, 2-millimeter cylindrical tablets that have a very high dosage, and those are often put into capsules then to control the dosage form. So you have X number of mini tabs in the capsule is what controls your ultimate dosage. So that's definitely something we've seen an uptick in.
And do these have different challenges then when you're changing the batch sizes or the size of the tablet or the size of the capsule? Is that an altogether different proposition that you're dealing with?
Not completely different, but there are unique challenges. So when you get to these really small tablets, the way the tablets tumble in a tablet coater, for example, does change. When you're spraying the coating onto the tablets, you have to be careful that you don't create twins where the tablets then stick together, which then disrupts your downstream dosage control. So there are some unique challenges, things like the pressure drop through the bed in a tablet coater. Because you have such a tightly compact bed of tablets, you'll have a higher pressure drop. But they're all things that can be fairly easily overcome as long as you know the challenges going in.
I guess that's just based on experience, isn't it? If you've dealt with enough of these differing sizes, batches, product quality, and the size of the tablets, you can bring a lot of experience to that. And I guess there's an art form to that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, absolutely. The experience certainly comes into that, and that's why we have a lab where we can run these trials with our customers and do our own development to understand the challenges and make sure the equipment we're providing factors that in.
I mean, is that something you like to do most of the time? Is take the client's product and take it to the lab and do testing on it before you scale that up?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a tool that we recommend as much as possible. I mean, oftentimes customers have already done some of that development work themselves, so we can learn from what they've done. But certainly if it's something new or a different application, we certainly recommend people come into our lab and do the testing. And we've got various sizes, so we can do start at really small scale, and then we can kind of scale up from there and help bring some of those issues to the front.
And what are some of the common issues that you may have come across regarding process equipment, and how do you guys address that?
Sure. I suppose one of the biggest things we run into in the last few years is just things like supply chain issues. We've all seen the impact of the pandemic and how that's impacted the industry, and in terms of just lead times of components, things like spare parts become very critical. I think it's put kind of a renewed focus on spares in the industry. People have realized that some of these things that used to be off the shelf now have a really long lead time, and your equipment can be down for a pretty considerable amount of time if you don't plan ahead and have some of these spares on hand. We obviously try to stock them at our facility to keep these available for our customers, but only stock so many, and as soon as you sell some of these, then we have to replenish them, and we have lead times. And so the more that we can convince our customers to plan ahead and stock some of these things themselves, the better off we are, and they are. So, that's certainly been one. maintenance of equipment is always an ongoing issue. I mean, there's uptime is important. So the more you can run the equipment, the better. But if you don't shut it down once in a while and maintain it, that's going to impact your uptime. So we have people sometimes that probably need to shut down a little more often and do a little more maintenance just to make sure that that doesn't impact them down the road. Things like upgrades, you know, computer upgrades over the years, maintaining the equipment, and then just training of people. There's always turnover in the industry. Maybe there's been a little bit more of that lately with some of the job changes we've seen in the last few years. So people are losing some of that wealth of knowledge that people had, and you got to keep people trained so they know the equipment and how to operate it and understand the processes. But yeah, I mean, in general terms, the equipment itself lasts a long time. We have coders that have been running for 40 plus years, but as long as you kind of maintain them over the years and keep the upgrades going, keep the control systems updated, keep the auxiliaries maintained, the core machine itself lasts a long time.
And that sort of scheduled maintenance, is that almost the same for each piece of equipment, or does it just purely depend on the usage?
It's somewhat dependent on the usage and the machine itself. Some equipment requires more maintenance than others, a lot more moving parts on certain pieces of equipment. But in general, I mean, each equipment, you can kind of set up a PM schedule of how you would need to maintain that to keep things operating.
Okay. And we've seen the growth of the CMO market quite rapidly over the last few years. How do you think that's affecting the process equipment industry?
One of the key things with CMOs is flexibility. They're in a business model where they're trying to win contracts with other customers. They may not know what processes are bringing into their facility, or they might be buying a piece of equipment right now for one process, but there's other processes coming down the road that they don't necessarily know what they are. So the more flexibility they can have with a single piece of equipment, the better. So, you know, it's an investment to buy a piece of equipment for these projects. So if you can buy a machine, for example, that has a flexible batch size range or flexibility in processes. So let's take a fluid bed, for example. Maybe you're doing a contract for a top spray granulation right now, but if you can invest a little bit more money in a multi-process machine where it can do top spray granulation, drying, bottom spray coating, spherical pelletization, things like that, maybe a small investment now sets you up super well for the future to win more business down the road. So that's really something that we like to kind of put in the minds of CMOs to think about, not just kind of focus on this one product they're working on right now. And just helping them understand what the process method is for how it's currently being manufactured. Because we have some background knowledge on how that process works, and we can help them tailor the equipment where they may not have all the information they need up front.
Okay. And sort of geographically, do you see any differences in the types of equipment that you're offering? Is it more customized in Europe or customized in the US, or is it a fairly general approach throughout the world?
I would say in general, it's a fairly general approach. You'll see some areas where obviously cost is more important. Low-cost manufacturing areas obviously need lower-cost equipment. Certain small nuances like top drive, high shear mixer versus bottom drive, that's sometimes geographically driven, but it's in general process driven, where whatever type of machine the process was originally developed on, that's what it'll be manufactured on. You wouldn't generally switch from one to the other. But I would just say in general, it's kind of all over. Everyone's looking for the best equipment for the process.
And are there any sort of new markets that you're looking at? I know we're talking very much with regard to the pharmaceutical industry, but are there any other areas that are expanding that you're working in?
Yeah, absolutely. The battery industry has been kind of a really good market for us. You know, a lot of what we do is powder processing, and coincidentally, the battery industry processes a lot of powders. So some of the same equipment we use in the pharma field can also be used for battery manufacturing for the materials that go into the anode or the cathode of the battery. And then I suppose one other thing we're starting to see a lot more of is things like in the nutraceutical or food industry, functional foods, things like probiotics. We've always had the protein powders and things like that, but people are starting to look at more of how they can develop food-based products that help generate a healthy environment for people, and that kind of comes into the same type of processes we're dealing with.
Well, that's interesting. We've given us some really interesting insights there, Jamie. Is there any sort of final thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with?
Sure. I suppose the one thing I really haven't touched on is PAT, or Process Analytical Technology. There's been a lot of talk about it for many years, and people have always kind of gotten excited about it and wanted to implement that on their equipment. But I suppose the one thing that really wasn't thought about as much until more recently is what that means for the equipment itself and the process and how you use that PAT instrumentation. So when you think about things like product moisture or particle size analysis, a lot of the instrumentation is very specialized. It's not something like a temperature sensor where you have a 0 to 100 degrees C and a 4 to 20 milliamp sensor that can just give you a direct correlation to the value you're trying to measure. You really have to characterize the data coming out of the instrument. So like a NIR moisture sensor is going to give you curves of spectrum that you have to then build characterizations for different products. So you have known correlation to moisture so that over time you can build a library of these models. So that's kind of thing people weren't really thinking about. They want to buy the instrument, but they don't think about, once I have it, how do I use it? Well, I think that knowledge is starting to come more now, and people are understanding what that really means and how they can truly implement PAT in their process to improve the manufacturing process.
And you think it was just an understanding of what to do with the data that sort of held people back? I know you said it was a little slow to be taken up, talked about a lot, but a little slow in implementation. Is it just an understanding?
I think primarily, yeah, they're starting to understand what the data means, how they can use it, and then what it takes to generate that data. So the investment for the sensor itself might be fairly small, relatively speaking, but then there's another investment of actually running multiple batches of products and building that library of data over time before you can really start getting a usable knowledge that can be implemented.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jamie, for your insights today. It's been really interesting. Where can people go to hear a little bit more about Freud and Vector?
Yeah, thank you. No, it's been good to be here. I suppose the best thing would be to go to our website. It's just freund-vector.com. We've got a lot of technical articles about different processes, a lot of machine knowledge that we have for different pieces of equipment, and then links to some of our seminars and webinars and things that we offer. So there's a lot of good information there.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Jamie, for today. It's been really, really insightful.
Great. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you.